Maseches Kilayim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Aleph, 2:1. We know that the prohibition of Kilay Zeraim, of planting mixed seeds, forbids you from putting combinations of two different species together. The question is, how much of an adulterating seed can you have before it's too much? That is to say, it doesn't stand to reason that if you have 100 bushels of wheat and you have one stalk of barley, that the whole thing is ruined because of kilayim. You have to figure out what the threshold is going to be when you're not intentionally planting the two species together, but there's some added mixture that got in there. So this mission will lay down the rules about what is the threshold after which you're not allowed to plant the combination of species. So for our purposes in this Mishnah, let's assume you want to have a barley crop. So question is, if you're planting barley, how much, let's say, wheat seeds can you mix into the combination with the barley seeds that makes the whole mixture forbidden to plant together? So the measurements used in this Mishnah are the saw and the rova. So a saw is the volume we, in our mind, in our shear, we use it as a six-pack of 2-liter bottles. So a kav in Chazal is roughly 2 liters, and six kavin together make for a saw. So 6 2-liter bottles is saw. A rova is a rova of a kav. That's a quarter of a kav, roughly 500 cc. But if you do the math, if there's six kavin in one saw, and of course there are 4 quarter kavin in one kav, you'll have a total of 24 quarter kavin in one saw. So the threshold, loosely speaking, we'll get the details in a minute in the Mishnah, is going to be at that point of 1 quarter kav in a total of a saw of seeds, meaning one part out of 24. That's the threshold, roughly speaking. Now, the truth is that one part out of 24 works out to 4.1666%. But for our purposes, keep things simple. I just have to, you know, the math will be intuitive in our heads. You'll see why I want this in a minute. Let's call it 4%. Okay? So we'll say the threshold is roughly 4%. But there's two ways to look at that. You could look at it as it has to be 96% pure, or you could look at it as it could have up to 4% of adulterating seeds. It's not quite the same, as you'll see in the Mishnah. So here the Mishnah says inside, Kol sa'at shiyesh bo rova mimin acher, any saw worth of seeds, called 12 liters worth of seeds, that has within it a quarter of a kav, call that 500 cc out of the 12, 1/24th, of a different species, you can't plant it as is. Rather, yima'et, you must reduce the proportion of adulterating seeds. So you have two options, of course. Either you could just, if you're planting barley, in our case here, you want a barley field, you could pull out some of the wheat seeds to get below the threshold, or you could just add more pure barley, bring the whole, you know, ratio of barley to wheat to above the 23-1 ratio you're looking for. That's what the Tanakh Kama says. Rabbi Yossi Omer Yavor. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you can't do that. He says, once you have more than one part of undesired, let's say wheat, to 23 parts of, yes, desired, let's say barley, meaning again, of the 24 parts of the total saw, more than one part, or in other words, a quarter of a kav, is of the undesired species, in this case, wheat. So you can't just remove some wheat or add some barley to change the ratio. He holds, that makes it look like you're allowing some on purpose to stay inside. Let's say you're pulling out. So you pull out some of the wheat, but you're leaving some of the wheat. So it sounds like you're purposely leaving some wheat inside because it looks bad. So Rabbi Yossi says no. He says once you've crossed this threshold and you must, you know, purify your seed mixture, you have to purify it entirely. So we could make a nice muster schmooze out of the different approaches to the Tanakh Kama and Rabbi Yossi about when one, you know, has to fix the problem, if he has to fix it just to the threshold or fix it to 100% purity. In any case, I won't discuss that, but that's the machlokas. The halacha on that point follows the Tanakh Kama. Now, we have a different machlokas coming up here. Do we look at it as you need to have 96% pure or just no more than 4% of impurity in the mix? Sounds the same, but here's the nafkamina. Tanakhama says, Bein min echad, bein mishne minin. Whether you have one or even two undesired species. Let's say, for example, you're growing barley. Let's let's say you have 3% wheat and 3% oats. So now, on the one hand, you haven't got 4% of any particular species that's adulterating it. On the other hand, you only have 94% pure barley growing there. So Tanakama holds that you need to have 96% pure. So that would be no good. 3% of the total being oats and 3% of the total being wheat makes it now that you've crossed the threshold of 4% adulteration and you can't plant it as is. However, Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Lo Amru El Min Echad. They said only one particular species of 4% makes it look like you're planting that on purpose also. But if neither of the adulterating seeds hit the 4% threshold, then it's okay. So Rabbi Shimon would say, if you have 3% wheat and 3% oats, no problem. You can plant that barley because since none of those adulterating species have hit the 4% threshold, so then it doesn't look like you planted them on purpose. That's okay. Chacham Omrim, this third shita is, Kol shu kilayim b'sa'a mitzdar flarova. The Chacham kind of go back to the approach of the Tanakama, and they say that you need to have 96% pure, or it's no good. The difference between the Chacham and the Tanakama is certain types of species are not considered to be kilayim one with the other. For example, barley and oats, if you recall from the first mission of Masechta, are not kilayim zebzeh. They're considered to be two like related subspecies. So that being the case, the question is, if you had, in my example, you're planting barley, but you have, out of the 100, 3% oats and 3% wheat, the Tanakama says the oats don't count against you, since oats and barley are not kilayim, and therefore you're left with effectively what's called 97% pure, if you call it like that, because the oats don't count against you, and therefore you can plant it. Whereas the Tanakama held, nope, if you have other kinds of species, it doesn't matter that some of those species are not kilayim zebezeh, for example, oats and barley. Rather, if you haven't got 96% pure, it's no good and you cannot plant it. The halacha on this part of the Mishnah follows the chachamim that you need to have a total of 96% pure, so to speak, meaning different species are combined to make it that you can plant the mixture. However, if the different species that are impurities, if one of those species are not kilayim with the particular species you're planting, so in our case, oats are mixed in with the barley and you're planting barley, those oats do not count against you to reach your total of 1/24th. That would ruin your mixture. Maseches Kilayim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Beis. The previous Mishnah had laid out the rules of what one is to do when he has a batch of seeds he intends to plant, let's say barley, and there is some other foreign species, some other kind of seed mixed into the seeds he intends to plant. So for argument's sake, he has some wheat kernels mixed into the barley. So the Mishnah came out that if you have more than 23 parts of the desired seed relative to one part of the not desired seed, or put a different way, you have less than one part of the undesired seed to 23 parts of the desired seed, then you are okay. Anything more than that, meaning more than one part in 24 of the undesired seed, then it has to be adjusted. Now, there was a discussion if you have two different types of adulterating impurities, you know, you're planting barley and you have, let's say, wheat and oats mixed in, what the lachas are then. But in any case, it revolved around the one part out of 24. Now, this Mishnah will say, B'medavar memorim, when did that apply? That's tfua b'tfua. If you have, let's say, wheat, barley, spelt, oats, rye, mixed up one with the other. Or kitnius b'kitnius, where you have different kinds of plants for which you eat those seeds, like, for example, rice, millet, sorghum, beans, peas, lentils, etc. Those are kitnius. So if you have two different kinds of beans, peas, etc., that are mixed together, again, it's one part in 24 is the threshold. Tfu b'kitnius, same goes if you have some grain mixed into your various, you know, beans, peas, etc. Or kitnius b'tfua, if you have lentils or rice, etc., mixed into your grain. And all those four permutations, the threshold is at one part in 24. Now, be'emes amru, the Mishnah says, the truth is, but when it says be'emes amru, which literally means the truth is, or the truth is they said, that means that this carries the weight as if it were halachal moshmi Sinai, that zerone gina, Now, what are Zeronagina? Zeronagina literally means garden seeds. But in contrast to tavua and kitnius, which are foodstuffs that one eats the seeds themselves. In the case of grain, you eat the wheat kernel once it's processed. In the case of beans and peas, you're eating the actual seed of the bean or pea. But zeronagina are seeds that you plant to grow some other plants. Like, for example, a tomato. You plant the tomato seed to get your tomatoes. You don't want to eat tomato seeds, you want to eat tomatoes. Same goes for cucumbers, same goes for carrots, turnip, etc. So if you have carrot seeds, which are zeronagina, she'ein ne'achalin, you don't eat the seed, you will eat the product from which the seed grows. So though, in such a case, the measurement is not quite the same. The measurement is that you look not at simply one part in 24 to be the threshold, but rather you have to consider the fact that when you plant zeronagina in a field, let's say cucumber seeds. So here's the case. If you had your sa'ah container filled with wheat seeds and your child sprinkled in some cucumber seeds, so it's not the same as the previous mishnah, which said, well, as long as there's less than 1/24 of the mixture cucumber seeds, you're okay. Because when it comes to cucumbers, of course, those plants are quite big. And if you have even less, if cucumber seeds go a long way, so you'll have a lot of cucumbers in the field and it will look like you have a significant portion of cucumbers growing in the wheat field, which would suggest that you did it on purpose. And that, of course, was forbidden. So that being the case, if, let's say, for argument's sake, you plant in a field of a given size, when it comes to wheat, you plant a whole container of seeds. Let's, call it 12 liters of seed, which is approximately the same as a saw. But if in that same size field, you would plant half as many seeds if you're growing cucumbers. So for argument's sake, 6 liters, half a saw. So then we're saying that the cucumbers are, so to speak, twice as potent or go twice as far, the seeds of the cucumbers, than the wheat. And therefore, the ratio is twice as strict. Meaning, if we said before it was 1/24 was the threshold, if you have, let's say, barley in your wheat, but if you have cucumber seeds in your wheat, assuming that you plant the density of cucumber seeds half as much in a given area relative to wheat, so in my example I said before, so then it wouldn't be 1/24, but rather twice as strict, meaning 1/48 of the mixture. If they were cucumber seeds, in my example, that would ruin the mixture. So I know from experience, half the people understand that perfectly because they're math people, and half the people are not quite clear on it because they're not math people. The truth is, everyone, math people, not math people alike, can definitely understand this. It's not very complicated. It's just a little tricky for me to explain. I'm going to try it again to make sure it's clear. The idea is that there's a 1/24 threshold when it comes to kitnios and grains. And we assume that they all roughly are planted in the same density in a field. When it comes to other plants, so typically you need much less seed to fill up the same amount of area because the plants that come from those seeds are larger. When it comes to, grain, they're grasses, they're very tall and skinny. But obviously other plants like a turnip or a radish or a cucumber or a tomato, the plant is much bigger and therefore you use much fewer seeds. And therefore the outcome will be that if you have even a few tomato seeds, you'll end up having quite a lot of tomato plant coverage in your field and will look like you purposefully planted tomatoes in your wheat field, and that's the problem. So therefore the rule is going to be that if you plant half as much seed, let's say of tomato or cucumber, whatever it is, in the field, same amount of area relative to wheat, then half as much seed will be the problem if it mixes in. So if the argument, the problem before was a quarter kav, however much that is, 500 cc, 500 milliliters in your sa'ah of wheat. Now, if assuming that the cucumbers or tomatoes are, go twice as far, so then the measurement would be half as much as the threshold. So instead of a quarter kav, it's an eighth of a kav. Instead of 500 cc, 500 milliliters, it'll be 250 milliliters will be the problem when it comes to tomatoes and cucumbers, assuming that you plant half as many seeds for the same amount of area as wheat or barley. Now, the way the Mishnah describes this, it uses two different terms. It uses a term for volume called a sa'ah, which I said before already is roughly 12 liters. And it uses an area, a measure of area on the two dimensions, called a base saw. a base saw, which is happens to be 50 by 50 amos, 2,500 square amos, is the amount of space in which one would normally plant a saw of wheat kernels, of grain. So if you have a saw, which is a measurement that's called 12 liters of wheat kernels, and you're going to go out and plant your seed efficiently and effectively, you will cover one base saw, 50 by 50 meters, with that saw worth of seeds. You wouldn't do any less dense because then you're wasting land, and you wouldn't do any more dense because then it won't grow effectively, grow well. You know, the seeds are too planted too close together, then the grain won't grow properly and it'll sort of starve itself. So that's the idea. So the Mishnah here inside refers to a nofil abesa, the amount of seeds that go to plant a besa. So the principle should be clear. Hopefully the words will now be clear. We read inside here one more time. Be'emes amru, the truth is they said, zeron regina, when it comes to plants that you don't eat the seeds, she'ein nechalen, those seeds are not eaten, they just make plants. And that's why you're planting the seeds, to get the plants. Mitzdarfin echad me'esrim barba, if you have two different kinds, let's say, for example, again, tomatoes and cucumbers, seeds mixed into your, let's say, barley seeds, they combine together, not as a 24th of the total volume, but a 24th of benofa labesa, of what you would use to plant a besa. Now, somehow the math can get a little confounding, but it actually is really simple. If a saw of seeds plants a base saw of area, when it comes to wheat and barley, etc., and let's say cucumbers, the seeds go twice as far, that would mean half a saw of seeds plant a base saw of land. And therefore, you can allow already at half as much seeds of cucumbers or tomatoes would be a problem relative to how much would be a problem if it were barley, etc. I hope that's clear. Reb Shimon Omer, Kishem Shamar Lahachmir, Kach Amar Lahakel. Reb Shimon says, listen, it's true that in most cases, Zeron Negina go much further, much fewer seeds go on the ground for a given area. But that's not always the case. Sometimes, says Reb Shimon, you could actually need to plant those seeds more densely, and therefore they don't go as far. And that would be the case of flax. So flax is a plant from which you get linen, and it is planted very, very densely. So instead of using one saw worth of seeds to plant a base saw of area, meaning instead of using the standard 12 liters of seeds to plant an area 50 by 50 almost in size, what you'll do is you'll plant three saw worth of seeds, of flax seeds, in that area. And that being the case, the flax seeds go not, they go less far, they're less potent than standard grain and kidneys. And so, in this case, since you plant three times as much in the same amount of area, you'll be allowed to have three times as much impurity of flax seeds in your wheat or barley before it's a problem. So, for example, instead of being 1/24th of the mixture being the problem, it becomes, if it's flax seeds that's mixed in, 3/24 of the mixture that becomes a problem. That's what the Mishnah says inside. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kashem Sham Lahachmir, the same way the rabbis, whoever they were, from the Be'emes Amru, said Zeron Gina are strict. Kach Amru Lahakel, it can also be a leniency. For example, Hapishtan Betfua, if you have flax seeds mixed into your grain, Mitzarefes Echad Me'esrim Varba, Benofalabesa. The flax also combines in a ratio that is how much of its flax seed would be planted into a base saw, which is three times as much. Gosh, I hope it's clear. Again, the words, let me translate them slowly again. It's echad me'esrim, it's 1/24th, one esrim ve'esrim varba, 1/24th, benofala besa, of how much flax seed would be planted in a given besa. And the answer is, since it, when it comes to flax, you don't plant one saw, you plant three saw in a besa. So therefore, the seeds go only a third as far, and therefore the violation of impurities when it comes to flax seeds is three times more lenient, and you'll be allowed three times as much seeds, meaning up to not 1/24th, but 3/24ths of the mixture being flaxseed before you have to address the impurities. Maseches Kilayim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Gimel, 2-3. Mishnah talks about a case where One's field was had been seeded with wheat kernels. Venimlach lizara lisorim. But then he changes his mind. He wants it to be a barley field instead. The problem is, now that the wheat seeds have been scattered, it's essentially impossible to get them back. So what can he do to not have the field grow with wheat and barley together? Yamtinla, he should wait for the field. Ad shitaslia, until the individual wheat kernels are maslia. Maslia is from the word like wormy, tolat. So either it means become like little worms, that is to say that the little root, as the thing germinates, comes out the bottom of the wheat kernel, and that little root is like a little tiny worm, or the meaning that the endosperm, the outside of the husk of the wheat kernel, rots as the process of taking root occurs, and makes it vulnerable. And that's going wormy, mostly got to go rotting. Whatever the case, the point is that once the wheat kernels have begun to germinate and rot or open up, so they're now vulnerable. And at that point of Yofach, you can till the soil, and by turning over the soil again, essentially you will destroy the wheat so that it won't actually ever grow to become a wheat grass, wheat, and therefore you haven't got a problem of wheat growing in your field. And at that point, Vachakach Yizra. And at that point, it's safe to plant barley in the field because ultimately the barley will grow and the wheat won't make it. Of course, whatever wheat does crop up later on in the field will have to be ripped out. Bartanura speaks out that if the ground is moist, it'll take about 3 days until the wheat begins to be maslia and is now vulnerable. If it would be hard, dry land, then it would take longer. In any case, after 3 days, it's vulnerable, and that continues for a while. The Mishnah continues on, Bim Tzamcha, once it's grown above the ground, like you have little green wheatgrass above the ground. So now you have the additional problem of an onlooker can see that it's becoming a barley field, and yet be careful not to look like you're planting kilaim intentionally, and therefore, lo yomar, you can't say Ezra va'achra kach ofach. You know what? I'll plant my barley seeds now, and then I will immediately till the soil, because the wheatgrass now even more vulnerable. It's now it's tomech, it's sprouted above the ground, and certainly by tilling the field, you'll destroy the wheat that's now sprouted, but you won't do anything negative to the barley. In fact, you'll probably help the barley get deeper in and get better planted in the ground. But you can't do that because it looks like you're planting kilaim, and you're actually planting barley into what's now a wheat grassed area. Ela hofach v'achakach zareya. Rather, first you have to till the field, uprooting that sprouting wheatgrass, and then you can plant the barley seeds. Now, when you start tilling the soil to uproot and kill that wheat that's growing there, it's not as easy as it sounds. You know, the plow that goes through the field at the time of the Mishnah is sort of a glorified, you know, knife sticking in the ground, if you will. So to get rid of all the wheat is kind of analogous to, you know, coloring in a picture using a pen. You know, it's very hard to get every last little bit of white colored in because the pen is thin. So the same kind of problem is going to happen here, that you start tilling the soil, but to get every last bit of wheat is, you know, essentially impossible. So the question then becomes, just how thorough of a job do you need to do when you plow the field to kill the wheat that's growing there? And that's what the Mishnah says, the kamiye choresh, just how much or how densely do you have to plow the field? The answer is kesalme haravia, the same density you plow when you plow your field to catch the rain. Now, a telem will translate as a furrow. That is to say, you know, if you imagine taking the good old knife plowing across the ground, it'll kind of dig a ditch, a little furrow in the ground. And then on either side of the furrow where the displaced sand is, there'll be two little mounds. So it is a bit of machlokas what a telem refers to, if it's the mound above or the furrow below. But in any case, let's talk about that. Let's assume it's the furrow below. So the furrows you plow in your field in order to catch the rain and stop rain runoff. Now, how dense is that? So according to Bartanura, it's dense enough that the displaced sand on either side of, you know, parallel furrows will touch one to the other. So fairly close together, but of course, since you're not really plowing the ground beneath the little ridge between the two furrows, that part perhaps will grow with wheat still. In any case, that's the sufficient density. And Avishol, however, argues, according to most pshatim, he is being machmir, and he says, no, that's not enough. Rather, Abishol says you have to plow Kadeshlo Yishayer, Rova Levesa. But not even one Rova for every Besa. Again, remember that would mean 1/24th, like in the previous Mishnayos. So 1/24th of the field can't remain unplowed. In other words, what he says is that for every, 24 stalks that are growing throughout the field, at least 23 of them better be barley, and only 1 of 24 can be wheat. So almost all learn that is a chumrah. There are those who learn it's the kula, actually, but whatever the case, the halacha is like the Tanakama, that Talmi Revia is sufficient density in terms of plowing your field to uproot what was growing there before to plant a new type of grain. Meseches Kilayim, Perek Beis Mishnah Dalad, 2-4. Zerua, if your field had been seeded, meaning with tavua, with one of the various grains, v'nimlach, you changed your mind, you didn't want it to be a grain field, you wanted lenota, you wanted to plant a vine, meaning a grapevine inside of it. The word zorea is seeds, the word notea is specific to planting trees, but of course, since there's no isra of kilayim with trees other than grapevines, we're talking about planting a grapevine here. Lo yomar, you shouldn't say, you may not say, Eta v'acharkach ofach, first I will plant that new tree, meaning the grapevine, v'acharkach ofach, and then I will till the soil, destroying the seeds that are growing there, as like the previous Mishnah. Ela hofach, first you have to till, destroying the grain that's growing in that future vineyard, v'acharkach notea, and then you can plant your grapevines. On the other hand, natua, if it had been planted with grapevines, v'nimlech lezara, now you want to plant seeds in its place, meaning you want to change it from being a vineyard to being a field of grain. So, lo yomar ezra v'achkach asharish, you can't say, first I will sprinkle the seeds, and after that I will uproot those grapevines. Elim misharish, first you have to uproot the vines, v'achkach zarea, and then once removed, you can plant the seeds. Now, im ratza, if you want. So to understand this mission, you have to actually look what grapevines look like. Older grapevines are basically like trees. They have thick trunks, and they can be well rooted to the ground. And if you don't have a pickup truck in the 21st century, it may be very difficult to actually uproot fully that tree. Essentially, it's a tree. So you have a plan B, imratza, gomem. You can cut it. Ad pachos metafach, until such that the trunk of the grapevine is less than one tefach, let's call it 3 or 4 inches, off the ground. So you basically chop it all the way down to the ground. Presumably it won't grow again, and therefore it no longer looks like a vineyard. It's just cleared out with some, dead tree stumps in there. And then you can zorea, plant your grains, v'acharkach misharish. And then later on, according to most mafarshim, they understand that the grapevine will not grow back. And therefore, acharkach misharish, after that you have to uproot, means if something further grows and the grapevine didn't ultimately die, then you're stuck having to rip those growths out. But under normal circumstances, if you're gomem, if you raise it down to the ground, so then the grapes aren't going to come back and no need to uproot anything more. There are those who ever learn that it's a two-step process. First, you can just gomem, raise it to the ground, plant your seeds, but ultimately you will actually have to, according to some, unfortunately, you'll have to uproot the actual trunks of the grapevines out of the ground. Meseches Kilayim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Hei, 2-5. Haisis Adeu Zerua Kanbus Aluf. If one had in his field planted kanbus or luf. Kanbus usually is referring to canvas, meaning a hemp plant. But in this Mishnah, it seems very unlikely it's referring to hemp, because hemp is very resilient and goes very fast. And this is referring to a plant that can be below the ground and not grow very fast at all, and sort of be dormant for years, unlike hemp. And therefore, the Rambam explains it to be caraway. Caraway seeds are like the seeds you put inside rye bread. Oluf. Luf is referring to arum. Arum is a kind of plant. Palestinian arum is used, the leaves are used for food. In any case, these can exist like in a bulbous way below the ground for a long time and not shoot up. And that being the case, lo yehi zorea uva al gabeim, you can't have these things on the ground and then bring other species atop of them. She'en osen el shlosha shanim, because they may not, even for 3 years, produce a plant. So the fear is that you would, seed your field with the second species, and then the first species, meaning the Convus or Loof, would grow up, and then you'd have two species growing together in your field. The mission continues, Tvua sha'ala va sviche istis. If you have a grain field, and then amidst the grain comes up sviche istis. Svichen means aftergrowth, like what we might call weeds, but svichen, you know, they grew by themselves. Istis is an English woad, W-O-A-D. It is a plant that produces a blue dye that we refer to as indigo, but blue jeans originally were dyed with. So if one's grain field had istis, woad aftergrowths appearing in it, so you should know these istis plants are sort of inimical. They're bad news for grain, and therefore it would be unlikely a person would purposefully allow for this istis, this woe, to grow amongst his grain, and therefore an onlooker would not dream that he did it on purpose to plant it that way. V'chein makom hagranot sha'alu behen minin harbe. Same goes for a threshing floor, the place where you use a draft animal to pull a threshing board over your harvested grain. It goes in a circle and it separates the kernels that are edible from the chaff. So that threshing floor and the threshing board that goes around needs a smooth surface. And if there'd be weeds sticking up on the threshing floor, that would just be totally counterproductive. And therefore, if a person has minim harbe, various types of plants growing up as weeds in the threshing floor, no one would dream that a person purposefully planted different species of weed in his threshing floor as kilayim. Obviously, it's just weeds that were undesired. V'chein, and the same goes with tiltan. Tiltan in modern Hebrew refers to clover, but not here. In Aramaic, the shin of Hebrew turns into a taf often. So tiltan, like the word shalosh, talas in Aramaic, or talat in Arabic. So tiltan is three leafed something, but not clover. In fact, it's fenugreek. Fenugreek is a foodstuff that's eaten around the world to this very day. In the time of Chazal, in the place of Chazal, typically the plant of the fenugreek plant was used as a fodder for animals to eat. And the seeds were used, as is the case today, to make kind of a paste and different kinds of, you know, spices and so on. So if a person is growing fenugreek in his garden, sha'ala mine tzmachin, and amongst the fenugreek other kind of weeds grow, that's bad news for the development and tastiness of the fenugreek seeds, and therefore a person would never let that happen on purpose. So an onlooker would never think that his fenugreek had been intentionally planted with other species as well. So in all those cases, ein mechayv naso l'nakesh, we do not require the farmer to weed out those istis growths, the weeds in the threshing floor, or the weeds, you know, the various species there, or the weeds amongst the fenugreek, because no one in his right mind would do that on purpose, so there's no reason to think he did it, and no one will suspect he did. However, im nikesh o kisach, if the farmer did in fact pluck out, weed out some of those weeds, or kisach is to cut them down at the root, not to pull them out, but to cut them down, then omrim lo, we tell that farmer, you can't just do half a job, akor es akol, you have to uproot all of those weeds that grew there, chutz munechad, except for one species. The reason why is because no one will think that the farmer allowed the weeds to grow on purpose. But once he's pulling them out, if he pulls out half and leaves half, so then it looks like he purposely left the second half because he wanted them to grow together, and that, of course, would be a problem. And therefore, while we don't require him to remove weeds, once he does start, he must finish the job. Maseches Kilayim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Vav, 2:6. The Mishnah now and for the rest of the Perek is going to discuss various configurations that are acceptable when you're planting multiple species of produce side by side so that it's visually distinct that each separate species is being kept separate so that there's no planting in a Kilayim, you know, in a mixed up Yerbuvia, mixed up fashion, that there's no problem of kilayim or even mekayim kilayim, keeping kilayim in one's field. So the first case here is talking about long, thin strips. And the Mishnah says, Harotz lazo sadeo meishar meishar mikol min. If a person wants to plant his land in long, thin strips, rectangular strips a various species side by side. So Beishame Omrim Beishame says Shlosha Tlam Mikol Pasiach, which means it has to be two amos across. Literally what the words mean is the width of three furrows that one tills in the ground when he is breaking the ground for later planting. And Beisil Omrim Malo Ol Hashironi, Beisil says it also has to be two amos across roughly. Literally the words mean Malo Ol Hashironi means the width of the yoke used in the valley when one is plowing. The Mishnah continues, Ukroven divrei elu, liyoska divrei elu. The shitas of these two, meaning Beisil and Beishame, are really similar quite one to the other, meaning they both hold that it's roughly two amos across. Now, the million-dollar question is, when we say it is two amos across, what are we referring to? So, according to the Bartanura, and this is the shita throughout the rest of the parak, we're talking about a space of unplanted land that will separate between the two planted species. So here we have a meishar, a long, rectangular, thin strip planted of, let's say, wheat, and you want to also plant next with a strip of barley. So according to the Bartanura, you'll need to have an unplanted, empty parcel of land that's two amos across that will separate between the wheat and the barley. According to the Bartanura, it actually turns out that you just need a square at the edge of the field of two amos by two amos. Again, two amos is roughly 1 meter, 1 yard, something like that. So basically 1 meter by meter square of unplanted land that will be at the edge of the field at the junction between where the, in this case, wheat and barley meet, separating them. And then the square can taper off, like converging, so it makes sort of like a pentagon, like sort of a house, outline of a house shape, if you know what I mean. Meaning like a square, and then the top of the square converges like a triangle to a single point, such that the wheat and the barley get closer and closer together, but never actually quite overlap. So that is the shita of the Bartanura, and he will learn that same way, meaning the Mishnah is going to give various shiurim in the next Mishnayos about empty, unplanted areas between various species that are used to act as a demarcation so that an onlooker will see that these two different species were not planted barbuvia, that weren't planted mixed together to constitute kilayim, and the farmer is not being mekayim, is not raising or allowing to be grown in his field kilayim. So it's sort of almost like a conceptual signpost that says, don't worry, I know there's wheat and barley here, but I planted them separately because of kilayim. That's what a blank, unplanted area of land does. There are other Rishonim, however, well, most like the Bartanura and the Rambam learn that way. There are other Rishonim and the Gra who learn that when the Mishnah gives a shiur, in this case, the width of two amos, 1 meter across, we're not talking about an unplanted parcel of land. In fact, there need not be any unplanted land. The shiur is telling you that in order for these two species, which are side by side, the wheat and the barley, to be visually distinct, that one can clearly see you have two separate, non-converging, non-commingled species planted side by side, in this case, wheat and barley, for example. So it's important that each section that's planted with a given species be sufficiently large so that it's neat and looks visually distinct. So the point is, if, of course, the wheat were planted in too thin of a strip next to a thin strip of barley, so from a distance, someone looking at the field would see wheat and barley growing together. But if you have sufficiently wide strips of wheat and barley growing side by side, since they're big, it's clear to anyone who looks at it that there are two separate, uncommingled, non-kilayim sections, one of wheat, one of barley, and there's nothing to be worried about. So that's how others will learn it. Again, the Mishnah here simply says, if you're planting meishar, long, thin, rectangular strips, you need to ensure that there is, that it, undivided, it is the width of the width is of two amos. According to Bartanura, it means that there's an unplanted piece of land at the edge of those two fields of the wheat and barley where they converge. And then you can have that, it's a square of two by two amos, meter by meter, which can then taper off further down, allowing the wheat and barley to grow ever closer together, but never actually touch. According to many others, including the first pshat of the Rosh Larosh and the Gruah throughout the whole of the rest of the perek, we're talking about the width of the planted area itself, and the Gruah understands, therefore, that it has to be it, meaning the strip of wheat beside the strip of barley. Each strip must be at least 2 amos across so that the two strips remain visually distinct. Maseches Kilayim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Zayin, 2-7. The Mishnah continues on discussing different configurations in one's field where he can plant two different species, let's say wheat and barley, side by side so that they are visually distinct and no one thinks that they are commingled and constitute Kilayim. So the Mishnah begins by saying, Haya Rosh Tur Chitim, Nichnis Betoch Shel Saorim. If you have a Rosh Tur, now a Tur is an ambiguous term. We'll learn like the Bar Tanur here and keep it simple. He understands it means you have, like, let's say, a triangular field of wheat, where the apex, the point, the triangle, is kind of poking in, so to speak, to a rectangular field of barley. So they're meeting at that point, if you will. So that's a Rosh Tur, the apex, the point of the triangular field of wheat, enters into, meaning it touches, you know, they're obviously not moving, but the point is if you took a, like, the map looks like it's, that triangle is touching, into the rectangle of Sorim, of barley, mutter, that's okay. Mipnei shehu nira kasof sadeu. That's okay because it looks like the end of his field. Now, what's going on here is that they're visually distinct, and therefore people can see they're not commingled. And more than that, the Torah's prohibition of planting kilayim, kilayim zraim, prohibits planting one's field, sadcha, your field, kilayim. Now, that is to say, there's no iser in planting two species next to each other per se. It's planting two separate species commingled in your sade, in your field. So, for example, you have two neighbors, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven plants wheat and Shimon plants barley, and the wheat and barley meet exactly the property line. There's no problem. There's no restrictions at all because neither Reuven nor Shimon planted his field with multiple commingled species. So therefore, no, whatever the definitions of the spacing or visual, you know, distinctions that are required to separate wheat from barley doesn't apply because each owner has his own field and the restriction exists only within your field, not within the land in general. So here, the Pashup Shot here is that when someone looks and sees a triangular wheat field intersecting, so to speak, with a rectangular barley field, you'll assume they're two different owners. They don't look like commingled whatsoever. Following on that theme, the Mishnah says, Shelo chita mishel chavero min acher. If indeed Reuven and Shimon have two fields, and Reuven planted wheat, Shimon planted barley, and both, let's say, if there was a property line, and they met exactly on the property line, there'd be no problem. So actually, therefore, the Mishnah says, Mutar l'smoch lo ma'oso hamin. Reuven may plant barley at the very edge of his field, where it meets with Shimon's field, of the species that Shimon planted. So all of a sudden now you have Reuven in his field planting wheat and barley side by side without any heck or without any differentiation. And although we said it's not normally okay, here, if you take a, you will see when you look at it that you've got one extended barley field touching a wheat field and everyone knows there's Reuven, there's Shimon's field, and therefore everyone knows, and everyone will assume, I should say, that there's no kilayim happening in Reuven's field. It's just that Reuven's growing wheat and Shimon's growing barley. And therefore there's no reason to be afraid that people perceive that Reuven has grown kilayim. So that's quite an interesting, chiddush that the Mishnah puts forth. The Mishnah continues on by saying, Shlosh al chitim shel chaveo chitim. If you are growing wheat, Reuven, and Shimon's growing wheat beside him, mutlis mochlo telem shel pishtim. There is a unique exemption, a kula, leniency, that applies to pishtan. Pishtan is flax. So flax, apparently, is not economically sensible to be grown in small quantities. If you're going to grow flax, you're going to grow a lot of flax. On the other hand, before you plant flax, it seems that it was normal to test the ground to ensure that flax would grow there properly. So the Mishnah here is suggesting, according to this ton anyways, that one could plant a single row of flax on the edge of his wheat field, and there's no reason to be afraid of appearing that he's growing kilayim. The reason being because anyone who looks and sees two wheat fields owned by two neighbors and a row, a single row of flax growing on the border, will know it's on the border. And the only reason that anyone would possibly plant a single row of flax is to test out the ground to see if it's economically viable to grow flax over there. And it's just a test run, and it was done separately and doesn't constitute kilayim, and it wasn't planted together. That being the case, there's no problem to plant that extra single row of flax on the edge. So here you see we have two conditions, basically. Number one, it has to be on the edge of the field, and number two, it has to be specifically out of flax, nothing else, to be allowed. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Echad Zera Pishtan Ve'echad Kol Aminim. Rabbi Shimon says there's no difference between this rule when it comes to planting flax and planting any other species. Now, whenever the Mishnah does that, it's ambiguous, and there'll be a machlokas in the Mefarshim if the Tana is coming to be lenient or strict. That is to say, does Rabbi Shimon mean just the same way you can't plant other species, you can't plant flax? Or does he mean to say, as a leniency, the same way you can plant flax, you can plant any species you want? Here, according to the Bartur anyways, Rabbi Shimon is coming to be machmir, strict, and he's saying there's no difference. You cannot plant a single row of any species, not even wheat, on the edge of your field without doing the proper separations. There's no such dispensation. That said, the vast majority of Mefarshim actually understand that Rabbi Shimon is lenient and understands that no matter what species you plant on the edge of your field, it's obviously onlooker, since it's just a single row and that's how you plant things. It must be that it's just a test run and it wasn't planted together with the main crop in the field as kilayim. Rabbi Yosi Omer, Af be'emsa sadeu mutar livdok betelem shel pishtan. Rabbi Yosi is certainly mekel. He addresses the other condition. So we said that the Tana Kama holds two basic conditions. It has to be specifically flax and it has to be on the edge of the field. Then Rabbi Shimon said, not necessarily flax. Now Rabbi Yosi says, not necessarily in the edge of your field. Meaning Rabbi Yosi holds, even if you plant that single row smack dab in the middle of your wheat field, everyone will know the only reason you did that is to test the field for viability. And we're talking about specifically just flax, which is never economically sensible to grow as a single row. And therefore, it's just clearly a test run. And that Rabbi Yosi says is okay, both on the edge or in the middle of one's field. The halacha is like the Tana Kama. That is to say, we do allow him to plant a row of flax, but only if it's flax, and only if it's on the edge of his field. Maseches Kilayim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Ches, 2:8. Ein somchin l'stei tfua chardel v'charia. One may not plant beside his field of grain, chardal, mustard, v'charia, saffron crocus. That's the plant from which saffron spice comes. Aval somchin l'stei yirakos chardel v'charia. But you can plant beside a field of vegetables, of various plants, chardal v'charia, mustard, or saffron. Now, according to the Bartanur, the pshat here is this. The mustard and saffron plants are inimical to grain. It damages grain. And that being the case, no normal person would plant saffron or mustard beside his grain. So if a person did that, then an onlooker would never think, even if the saffron or mustard were on the border of his land, the onlooker would never think that someone else, other than the owner of the field, planted that mustard or saffron, because the owner of the field would never allow it to happen. He would object because the neighbor is damaging his property. That being the case, the onlooker will assume, says the Bartanura, that the same person who planted the grain must have planted the mustard or saffron, and therefore he'll be assumed to have planted kilayim. Mighty counterintuitive, but that's the shot according to the Bartanura. Now, Tos Yontef just can't swallow that. He has a very basic question, which, according to how I've explained the Mishnahs before, will be evident to you also. The previous Mishnah said, if you're planting wheat in your field, you can't plant at the edge of your field another strip with the possible exception of flax, which means other than flax, you can't plant other stuff over there. Now, this Mishnah is saying, go ahead. Plant whatever you want as a strip at the edge of your field. Just make sure it's not mustard or saffron, because then people will assume it's yours, you planted key lime. So that sort of doesn't add up. And therefore, the Tosi Yontov says that's not the Pshat in the Mishnah at all. According to Tosi Yontov, the Pshat is totally different. The Pshat is, as we said previously in a previous Mishnah, the Torah's prohibition is planting sadcha your field with key lime. But for you to have wheat and your neighbor to have barley and the two fields to touch one another is no problem. So this is sort of not objective, meaning external to the planter. It has to do with the field that belongs to the given farmer, the given person who planted it. And that being the case, says Tosi Yontov, a person would be allowed, say Reuven and Shimon are neighbors, and let's say Reuven, for argument's sake, has wheat and Shimon has barley. Reuven could take a patch right in the middle of Shimon's barley field and plant onions there without a problem. And even though the onions are not, you know, visually distinct necessarily from the barley in Shimon's field, so what? Shimon didn't plant key lime. Reuven planted a separate section in Shimon's field, but it wasn't Shimon in his field who planted two different species. So that being the case, it would be okay, so the Tosi Yontov. And so be it. The problem is, if Reuven took a section inside of Shimon's land, and in that section, he wants to have this clever chop of planting different species inside there and not constituting key lime, if Reuven would plant chardal v'charia, if you plant mustard or saffron, so then anyone who looks at that will never agree, never dream that Shimon allowed Reuven to plant mustard in the middle of his barley field, because everyone knows that mustard is bad news for barley. And therefore, it must be that Shimon himself is a meshugan and he planted the mustard in the middle of his barley field. And therefore, it must be that Shimon is planting and allowing key lime to grow. Therefore, the pshat in the Mishnah is, while you could put in your neighbor's field another species without any special separation, since it's not your field, that is not the case when it comes to these two particular plants, the mustard and the saffron, because those are inimical to grain, and therefore the onlooker will assume that it's not the neighbor's, but your own key lime that's been planted over there. That's a Tosi Yontov's pshat in the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah continues on and says that when you plant two different species, we're going to have different rules about what separates and divides them. But if you have a natural divider, which will make it into two separate fields, even if you own the land, but something that naturally divides your land into two separate halachic fields, very much like what we saw back in Maseches Peah, that if you have a natural divider, like halachic dividers, we'll see in the same kind of list in a second, then it divides your field into two halachic fields, and you have to leave Peah in each separate, quote-unquote, halachic field. You can't leave peon for one field on the other. So to here, if you have a single tract of land, but it's divided up and broken up by some halachic barrier, if you will, that divides into two fields. So since now you're not planting a single field, sadcha, your field, kilaim, you can plant two separate species on either side of that barrier without having to worry about the other kinds of spacings or size requirements. So then the Mishnah now says, what are the barriers which constitute a separation of your land in two separate fields? V'somach labor, you can plant two different species abutting a boor. Boor is an unplowed, unplanted soil, like a virgin soil. It's never been cultivated before. V'lanir, same goes for a plowed but unplanted section of land. V'lagapa, a gapa is a, according to Bar Tanura, a stone wall that doesn't have mortar between the stones. So like divides up, it's a divider. Vela derech, and same goes if you have a little path, a derech, a little road, running through your field. We're talking about even a little path or road that is four almost across, that's used to get, you know, from one person's property to another person's property, as opposed to the shfil. But the derech, even a private derech of four almost across, is enough to act as a boundary that divides two fields, and therefore a person could plant either side of the derech without worrying about other requirements. Vela geder, same goes if you have a fence, shehu gavoa asar tfachim, as long as that fence is 10 tfachim high, and in truth 4 tfachim across, like long, not wide but long, then that fence acts as a boundary, and you can plant on either side of the fence without any further spacing requirements. Vela charitz, same goes if you have a ditch, shehu amok asara v'rachav arba, if the ditch is 10 tfachim deep and 4 tfachim wide, It also constitutes a break in the field, and you can plant it on the side of it. Vila ilan shu mesach al haaretz. Also, you have a tree, like a willow tree, that kind of drapes onto the ground. So then you kind of have two domains. You have sort of outside of the branches and the inside beneath the tree that's draped onto the ground. So as long as the branches of that tree, let's call it a willow tree, that's something like a willow tree, is within three tefachim on the ground, so then it is as if it's like a separate domain beneath the tree, and you can plant two different species, one beneath the tree and one outside the branches of the tree. Again, don't forget that when it comes to trees, there's no issue of kilaim ever in terms of kilaim's rhyme of planting the tree, so that's not a problem at all. And vilasela, same goes if you have bedrock. Sela is just a rock that like protrudes from the ground, that just, you know, is part of the underlying rock, bedrock. So as long as that bedrock is shu gavoa sarav rachav arba, if it's 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide, it constitutes a bona fide solid partition, dividing your land to two separate fields, and you can plant on either side of that rock. Meseches Kilaim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Tes, that's 2:9. Harotu laso sadeo karachas karachas mikol min. If a person wants to take his field and make it into neat square patches of all different types of produce, osa esrim v'arba karachas lebesa, he can make patches as small as 1/24 of a base saw each. A base saw is an area of land that's 50 amos by 50 amos. An amos, of course, a cubit from your elbow to your finger, tip of your middle finger. So let's call that about half a meter. So that means that 50 amos by 50 amos is about 25 meters by 25 meters, say 625 square meters, you know, roughly twice the size of a tennis court area or half the size of an Olympic pool, that kind of size. So you can divide that whole base onto 24 equal neat patches, each, you know, a square on the side, roughly, you know, comes out to about 10 amos by 10 amos, 5 meters by 5 meters, you know, 25 square meters or so, kind of like the size of a parking spot, a standard American parking spot, 260 square feet, something like that. So he can make a series of 24 patches, each a base rova. A rova means a quarter. So it's a quarter of a kav, of which there are six kavan in a saw. So it's 24 bate rova in one base saw. So he can make parking lot, American parking spot sized patches, 24 of them in the big square of the base saw, each with its own species, and that will be okay. This is going to be Reb Meir's sheet. The Reb Meir holds that as long as it's neat and orderly, and each separate patch is sufficiently large and visually distinct from the neighboring patches, so then you can line them up, so to speak, as many as you want, as long as they're large enough. Large enough meaning each one is the size of a base rova, and you have no problem of looking as if you planted kilaim or the plants being, you know, commingled and constituting kilaim. There is a big tumult here in as much as the base saw is described as being perfectly square, 50 by 50, and the karachas is described as being perfectly square. And if you do the geometry, there's no way to squeeze 24 equal sized squares into one big square. So in any case, either means the base saw is a rectangle or the base rova are rectangular, whatever the case may be. That's what we're talking about over here. So long story short, Reb Meir holds that you don't need any spacing at all. You can pack them in densely as long as each separate patch, each karachas, literally a bald patch, of your field is visually distinct and sufficiently large. Again, that means the size of a base rova. Again, just reading the words, harotz lasos tzedeo karachas karachas. If you want to make your field with lots of separate patches, mikol min of different species, osa esrim varba karachos levesa, you can make as many as 24 separate patches per besa. Mikarachas the base rova, meaning each patch of each species is the size of a base rova. Vizareya besocha kol min sheyirtza, and in that base rova, in that, you know, 10 by 10 ama spot, roughly a little bigger, you can plant whatever species you want. Now, according to the Bartanura, the next line of the Mishnah is tangential, so to speak. Let's just skip it for a minute. We'll come back to it. Then the words of the Mishnah are Divrei Rebbe Meir. What we just read is Rebbe Meir Shita. There'll be two things in Rebbe Meir. We read the first one already. The second one I skipped. And the Chacham are going to disagree. The Chacham are going to say, Chacham Omrim, Teisha Karachos Mutaros Eser Asuros. They say 9 Karachos is okay, but 10 is not okay. That is to say, in your field, you want to make squares, then you, according to the Baratanura, you need to have spacing between each planted patch and the next planted patch, because the Baratanura learns, like the Rambam and many others, that we need actual empty, unplanted land between different species, and therefore it'll come out. But if you think you have a square, let's think of 5 by 5 square, if that's how you have your base saw, so then, and we'll call, like, say, the columns A, B, C, D, E, and the rows 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, a total of 25. So the rabbis hold you can plant in alternating squares, meaning A1, A3, and A5, nothing in B, and then again C1, C3, C5, nothing in D, and then E1, E3, and E5, and everything's spaced out, and that's how you get 9 total out of 25. According to the Gra, who happens to be my preferred shot and approach throughout this entire Masechta, this Perek, and the next, there's not going to be ever a requirement for just blank spaces of unplanted crops, and that will be a sheet that plays itself out over the next, many Mishnayas. The Gra holds what's important simply that it's visually distinct, just like as Reb Meir, as I described it. And the only difference is, according to the Gra, Reb Meir says you can squeeze as many as 24 different patches without any spacing in a single base saw, because he holds that a base rova is big enough to be visually distinct, and therefore 24 of those are just fine. According to the Gra, there is a limit at 9. So in other words, there's no empty spaces, like in the example I gave before. According to Bar Tanura, you had rows 2 and 4 and columns B and D were empty, unplanted, so that would make these, like, big, gaps between. The grass has no gaps required. However, just 9 is an upper limit in terms of the different number of species in a single base saw, and therefore you could have plant patches of any size, provided that they are no smaller than a base rova each, and that there are no more than 9 per base, 9 different species per base saw. Now, just going back to the part I skipped, according to the Bar Tanura, this is a different discussion, a slightly different discussion, but if you read it together, it looks kind of confusing. The Bar Tanura understands that we're lapsing to a different case Reb Meir wants to discuss, which is if you have a patch of mustard in your grain field. So you use the same word karachas, but we're not talking about the densely packed, square. We're talking about a different case here. And the Reb Meir is going to say that if you have 1 or 2 patches of mustard in your grain field, that's okay. But more than that, not okay, because it looks then that it is not just a few mustard patches, but an entire mustard field, since it's not normal to plant patches of mustard like that. And therefore a person will look at this field and say, oh, it's a mustard field. Wait a second, it's got grain inside of it, and it looks like a grain field and a mustard field commingled, and that's kilayim. And therefore the Mishnah says, I'm going back to the part I skipped before, Haitza karachas achas oshtayim, if you have just 1 or 2 patches in your grain field, zorim chardal, you could plant chardal, chardal is mustard. Shalosh, however, 3 patches, lo yizra chardal, you may not plant mustard in those 3 patches, but may she nearest kastei chardal, because all of a sudden, it will look like one big mustard field commingled with your grain field. That's different Reb Meir. So Reb Meir is going to hold those 2 shitas, the one I said at the beginning and the one I went back to right now. And again, the Chum then go back to addressing just the first point of Reb Meir, saying that Teisha Karachos Mutaros, that 9 different patches in a base saw is okay, but Eser Asuras, but 10 is not okay. The Mishnah continues on by saying, Rabbi Elezer and Yaakov Omer, Afilu Kol Sadeo Base Kor. Now, he's kind of going back, if you will, to the second point of Meir Med, and he says, even if your field is gigantic, a base core, is 30 saw. So if the base saw is 50 by 50 almost, 2,500 square almost, the base core is 30 times that size, 75,000 square almost. So now you're talking about something like around, a gigantic area the size of, let's say, 15 Olympic pools, or whatever it is, you know, 60 or something like that. Tennis courts, a gigantic area. Even so, lo yase besocha chutz makrachas achas, you may not put more than one patch of another species inside your field, because, well, it's not clear why, because in fact the Bartanura says, the time of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, lo yase paresh. I just don't know the reason for Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov shita. In any case, so I don't know it either, but that is his shita. Halacha, of course, not like him, halacha is like the Chachamim. Kilaim, Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud, 2:10. Now we have the last Mishnah that discusses the spacing between different patches or fields of various types of plants. And finally, we explicitly talk about the requirements for the Beisa, or the 6x6 Tfachim, as the case may be. Now, as you said, when we talk about the Beisa as a space, there's two approaches in the Mefarshim, what we're talking about over here. Everyone agrees that we're dealing with the problem of appearing, being mekayem, to allowing to grow two species too close together, having as if you've planted them together, or they're commingling. And therefore, the principle at work here is the two different species of plants must be visually distinct. Now, the way that's achieved is by a mechanism that is a base rova in size. Again, base rova, the 24th of a base saw, which ends up being roughly 10 by 10, a little bigger, but let's call it 10 by 10, almost. Something like 5 by 5 meters. 15 by 15 feet, something like that. So we need this base rova, but there's a fundamental machlokus what that base rova is all about. According to most Mefarshim, including the Bartanura, our hero, what we're talking about is a blank, unplanted area, the size of a base rova, which is intercedes between the different fields. In other words, if you have wheat and barley growing side by side, at the edge of those two fields where they come together, you'll have to have an area of a base rova, roughly 10 by 10 almost, of nothing, unplanted, land, which will act as a divider between these two fields. Now, according to that, if let's say the, for argument's sake, you had a massive 20 by 20 field of wheat and a 20 by 20 field of barley. So in the middle of the two of them, between the two on the edge, you'll have to have an empty, unplanted area of land. But then that only goes 10 deep, 10 almost deep. Beyond that, the two fields will converge and come together. Some Achronim explain that they can just come right up to each other, and some understand that the space has to taper, like, kind of like a triangle, if you will, from 10 towards zero, but never actually, you know, getting to zero. So they never actually have planted one next to the other. It's just a converging kind of triangle of unplanted area. So it would be a triangle beyond the square of unplanted, kind of like a house shape, like a pentagonal shape. That's how most learn according to the Bartanura. The other approach is that of the Rosh Tzurilio and the Gra. The Rosh Tzurilio, again, Mefarish on the Yerushalmi in Kilaim, the Gra in his Parish of Mishnayos. Understand that there's no requirement ever to have a blank, unplanted area of a base rova. That never comes into play. The base rova is referring to the size of the field itself. That is to say, if you have two fields that are sufficiently large, one of wheat, one of barley, says the Gra and the Rosh Tzurilio, then they're visually distinct, even if they're touching one next to the other, because it's perfectly clear this massive area is all wheat, this massive area is all barley. So according to them, we're never worried about the spacing between the wheat and the barley. We're just talking about the space of, the dimensions of the barley field and the wheat field. If they're sufficiently large, they're visually distinct. And anyone can see from a distance, oh, that's wheat, and that's separate and distinct from barley. So the base rova, according to them, is the size requirement of each field so that they stand alone, even though there's no spacing between them. Okay? So the Mishnah first discusses the calculations of the base rova a little more, and then we'll go back to talking about where the base rova is applicable. So first the Mishnah says, Kol shu besoch base rova, in that base rova space, whatever is in it, even something that's unplantable, let's say you have like cracks in the ground that are filled with water, so like little puddles,
you know, like, or little, I don't know, little like ponds or something, whatever it is. So those little puddles or ponds are filled up crevices of water, even though you could never plant in such a crevice. And therefore, it might look like the reason that you've got to unplant it is, you know, I'm going to explain this first according to the Bartanura and most, and then we'll go back to the Grah. So we're talking about the Beis Rova here being an unplanted area. So even though you could never plant in that little crevice that's filled with water, for argument's sake, it doesn't matter. One wouldn't say, oh, really, it's not visually distinct, and the reason he didn't plant there is he would have planted there, but he couldn't because of the, you know, the waters there. No, as long as there is a space of a Beis Rova, and therefore it separates the two fields of, let's say, wheat and barley, the wheat and barley are visually distinct, and it doesn't matter that there's a reason why you might have not otherwise planted there anyways in that blank space, for argument's sake, because it had a crack filled with water. So whatever is in the Beis Rova, it doesn't matter. Ola b'minas Beis Rova, it counts for the Beis Rova. And similarly, if in that Beis Rova of unplanted field, you have a chilas agefen, you have the work area around a vine, a grapevine, as we'll learn later in the Masechta, you have to leave around every vine, trunk of every grapevine's, you know, trunk, a radius of 6 tvachim, la halacha, around it, where you don't plant anything else because it's kilaim. So again, the idea is, even though there's a grape, the perimeter, achilas agefen, the perimeter around the grapevine that you couldn't plant anyways, even though you couldn't plant it, doesn't mean it doesn't serve as an effective divider to make these two fields of wheat and barley, for argument's sake, visually distinct. And the same goes with a kever, if you have, like, say, an unmarked grave in the middle of your Beis Rova. Now, the reason you can't plant on it is because it's forbidden to plant atop of a grave. But nevertheless, the Beis Rova remains big and empty, and therefore acts to separate the two fields and lets them be visually distinct. Vahasela, same goes for bedrock. Bedrock, if you have, you know, a bedrock protruding from the ground in the field, of course you can't plant there because there's no soil. And therefore, again, you might think, one might have thought that you didn't plant there for reasons other than just as a hecker to divide the two fields of wheat and barley. But no, not true. As long as it's unplanted, it's effective as a divider. All those things, all in the Midas Beis Rova, all those, whatever is inside the Beis Rova area is included in the Beis Rova. So it's, you know, Beis Rova ignoring whatever happens to be in the middle of it. That's the pshat according to the Bartanura and almost all, and all the other Rishonim. According to the Gra and the Rush Cirilio, we're talking about the wheat field itself or the barley field itself. Each one has to be a Beis Rova in size. And even if it's not a solid Beis Rova, because there's a segment or section inside the wheat field that couldn't be planted because it's a crack filled with water, or it's got in it like a work area of a grape vine, even if, let's say, the grapevine's out of the area, but it's, you know, with it, it's within the corner of the grapevine, the work area, enters into the field, so you couldn't plant your wheat there, or you have an unmarked grave over there, or you have bedrock growing over there, and therefore you haven't got a solid, homogeneous 10 and a bit by 10 and a bit Amma area of wheat, because there's a section that isn't planted for whatever reason. It doesn't matter, since in total, it's still a 10 by 10 area. It's visually distinct. That's sufficient. Okay, now the Mishnah goes and finally says, after all this talk, exactly when the Beis Rova applies. So we have Tvua b'Tvua. If you have two fields, one planted within or beside the other, we're not talking about surrounded on all four sides, but if you plant wheat next to barley, where you have a big barley field and you want to plant wheat amongst the barley, just again, not enclosed on all four sides, then Beis Rova, what you need to have is a Beis Rova, as according to Bartanura, a divider between the two. And according to the Gra, etc., it's going to be that the wheat you planted amongst the barley has to be a Beis Rova in size. Yerek b'Yerek, on the other hand, if you're not planting tvua, grain, which would be, you know, the chameshet aminim, etc., grain, instead you're planting different kinds of vegetables. You got turnips, you got radishes, you got collard greens or whatever it is, cabbages, etc., and you're planting them in squares, so then you need to have not a Beis Rova, because you don't normally plant vegetables in such large areas, rather, shisha tefachim, a mere 6 tefach square would be enough, or 6 tefach dividing of unplanted area between the square of vegetable A and the square of vegetable B. Again, that's according to the Bartanura, that it's an unplanted area. According to the Gra and the Rush Cirilio, you won't have to do that at all. Instead, you could just plant the two vegetables side by side No problem, as long as each of the vegetable patches are sufficiently large. And how sufficiently large? 6x6 tfachim is sufficiently large. Tfuah b'yerek, what happens if you have amongst your greens you plant grain, or yerek b'tavuah, amongst your grain fields you plant some kind of green, some vegetables, whatever it is. The rule is beis rova. This first shita is that it doesn't matter. The area that we're talking about, if you have a square planted area, has to be a whole beis rova inside of each. The grains and the greens both must be beis rova inside to be visually distinct, according to the Gra, and according to the Bar Tanura, etc., means an unplanted area the size of a beis rova between your grains and greens. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees, and he says yerek b'tavua. If you're planting a vegetable patch, a patch of yerakos, of greens, beside or within or next to a grain field, then shisha tefachim is sufficient. You don't need a full beis rova. Six tefachim will do, meaning the space of unplanted area, according to the Bar Tanura, between the grains and the greens need not be a whole beis rova, as the previous Tana held. Rather, a simple 6x6 tefachim would be sufficient. And according to the Gra, we're saying that if you have a big big grain field and you want to plant a vegetable patch along one of its edges, again, not totally surrounded on all four sides, but on one of its edges, no problem. As long as your vegetable patch is 6x6 tefachim, that's sufficient because it's visually distinct as a 6x6 plot of vegetables next to a larger grain field. Halach, however, does not follow Rabbi Eliezer. It follows the Tanakama, meaning that if you have grains and greens side by side, and your grains are in a square area, and your greens in a square area, as opposed to rows, as we discussed previously, we had rows and strips and lines, shuros, etc. But if you have a square of vegetables, you'll need to have, according to Bar Tanura, the full base row of unplanted area, offsetting the area from the grains from the greens. And according to the Gra and the Rosh Srilio, you'll need to have both, if you have squares, both the grains and the greens be a full base row of it inside size to be visually distinct if you want to plant them one next to the other. Kilaim, Perek Base, Mishnah Yud, 2:10. Now we have the last Mishnah that discusses the spacing between different patches or fields of various types of plants. And finally, we explicitly talk about the requirements for the Besa, or the 6x6 Tfachim, as the case may be. Now, as you said, when we talk about the Besa as a space, there's two approaches in the Mefarshim what we're talking about over here. Everyone agrees that we're dealing with the problem of appearing in the Kayem to allowing to grow two species too close together, having as if you've planted them together, or they're commingling. And therefore, the principle at work here is the two different species of plants must be visually distinct. Now, the way that's achieved is by a mechanism that is a beis rova in size. Again, beis rova, the 24th of a beis sa, which ends up being roughly 10 by 10, a little bigger, but let's call it 10 by 10, amos, something like 5 by 5 meters, 15 by 15 feet, something like that. So we need this beis rova, but there's a fundamental machlokus what that beis rova is all about. According to most Mefarshim, including the Bar Tanura, our hero, what we're talking about is a blank, unplanted area, the size of a beis rova, which is intercedes between the different fields. In other words, if you have wheat and barley growing side by side, at the edge of those two fields where they come together, you'll have to have an area of a beis rova, roughly 10 by 10 amos, of nothing, unplanted, land, which will act as a divider between these two fields. Now, according to that, for argument's sake, you had a massive 20 by 20 field of wheat and a 20 by 20 field of barley. So in the middle of the two of them, between the two on the edge, you'll have to have an empty, unplanted area of land. But then that only goes 10 deep, 10 almost deep. Beyond that, the two fields will converge and come together. Some Achronim explain that they can just come right up to each other, and some understand that the space has to taper, kind of like a triangle, if you will, from 10 towards 0, but never actually, getting to 0. So they never actually planted one next to the other. It's just a converging kind of triangle of unplanted area. So it would be a triangle beyond the square of unplanted, kind of like a house shape, like a pentagonal shape. That's how most learn, according to Bartanura. The other approach is that of the Rosh Tzurilio and the Gra. The Rosh Tzurilio, again, Mefarish on the Yerushalmi in Kilayim, the Gra in his Parish of Mishnayos. Understand that there's no requirement ever to have a blank, unplanted area of, you know, of a base rova. That never comes into play. The base rova is referring to the size of the field itself. That is to say, if you have two fields that are sufficiently large, one of wheat, one of barley, says the Gra and the Rosh Tzurilio, then they're visually distinct, even if they're touching one next to the other, because it's perfectly clear this massive area is all wheat, this massive area is all barley. So according to them, we're never worried about the spacing between the wheat and the barley. We're just talking about the space of, the dimensions of the barley field and the wheat field. If they're sufficiently large, they're visually distinct. And anyone can see from a distance, oh, that's wheat, and that's separate and distinct from barley. So the base rova, according to them, is the size requirement of each field that they stand alone, even though there's no spacing between them. Okay? So the Mishnah first discusses the calculations of the base rova a little more, and then we'll go back to talking about where the base rova is applicable. So first the Mishnah says, Kol shu besoch base rova, in that base rova space, whatever is in it, even something that's unplantable, let's say you have like, you know, like cracks in the ground that are filled with water. So like little puddles, you know, like, or little, I don't know, little like ponds or something, whatever it is. So those little puddles or ponds or filled up crevices of water, even though you could never plant in such a crevice, and therefore it might look like the reason that you've got it unplanted is, you know, I'm going to explain this first according to the Bartanura and most, and then we'll go back to the Gra. So we're talking about the base rova here being an unplanted area. So even though you could never plant in that little crevice that's filled with water, for argument's sake, it doesn't matter. One wouldn't say, oh, really, it's not visually distinct, and the reason he didn't plant there is he would have planted there, but he couldn't because of the, you know, the water there. No. As long as there is a space of a base rova, and therefore it separates the two fields of, let's say, wheat and barley, the wheat and barley are visually distinct, and it doesn't matter that there's a reason why you might have not otherwise planted there anyways in that blank space, for argument's sake, because it had a crack filled with water. So whatever is in the base rova, it doesn't matter. All the base rova, it counts for the base rova. And similarly, if in that base rova of unplanted field, you have a chilas agefen, you have the work area around a vine, a grapevine, as we'll learn later in the Masechta, you have to leave around every vine, trunk of every grapevine's, you know, trunk, a radius of 6 tfachim, la halacha, around it, where you don't plant anything else because it's kilayim. So again, the idea is, even though there's a great, the perimeter, Achilles Agefen, the perimeter around the grapevine, that you couldn't plant anyways, even though you couldn't plant it, doesn't mean it doesn't serve as an effective divider, to make these two fields of wheat and barley, for argument's sake, visually distinct. And the same goes with a kever, if you have, like, say, an unmarked grave in the middle of your base rova. Now, the reason you can't plant on it is because it's forbidden to plant atop of a grave. But nevertheless, the base rova remains big and empty, and therefore acts to separate the two fields and lets them be visually distinct. Vahasela, same goes for bedrock. Bedrock, if you have, you know, bedrock protruding from the ground in the field, of course you can't plant there because there's no soil. And therefore, again, you might think, one might have thought that you didn't plant there for reasons other than just as a hecker to divide the two fields of wheat and barley. But no, not true. As long as it's unplanted, it's effective as a divider. All those things, all in the midas base rova, all those, whatever is inside the base rova area is included in the base rova. So it's, you know, base rova ignoring whatever happens to be in the middle of it. That's the pshat according to the Bartanura and almost all, and all the other Rishonim. According to the Gra and the Rosh Tzurilio, we're talking about the wheat field itself or the barley field itself. Each one has to be a base rova in size. And even if it's not a solid base rova, because there's a segment or section inside the wheat field that couldn't be planted because it's like a crack filled with water, or it's got in it like a work area of a grape vine, even let's say the grape vine's out of the area, but it's, you know, it's within the corner of the grape vine's work area, enters into the field, so you couldn't plant your wheat there, or you have an unmarked grave over there, or you have bedrock growing over there, and therefore you haven't got a solid homogeneous
10 and a bit by 10 and a bit area of wheat, because there's a section that isn't planted for whatever reason. It doesn't matter, since in total, it's still a 10 by 10 area. It's visually distinct. That's sufficient. Okay, now the Mishnah goes and finally says, after all this talk, exactly when the Beis Rova applies. So we have Tvua b'Tvua. If you have two fields, one planted within or beside the other, we're not talking about surrounding on all four sides, but if you plant wheat next to barley, where you have a big barley field and you want to plant wheat amongst the barley, just again, not enclosed on all four sides, then Beis Rova, what you need to have is a Beis Rova, as according to Bar Tanura, a divider between the two, and according to the Gra, etc., it's going to be that the wheat you planted amongst the barley has to be a Beis Rova in size. Yerek b'Yerek, on the other hand, if you're not planting tvua, grain, which would be, you know, the chameshet aminim, etc., grain, instead you're planting different kinds of vegetables. You got turnips, you got radishes, you got collard greens or whatever it is, cabbages, etc., and you're planting them in squares, so then you need to have not a Beis Rova, because you don't normally plant vegetables in such large areas, rather, shisha tfachim, a mere six tefach square, would be enough, or six tefach dividing of unplanted area between the square of vegetable A and the square of vegetable B. Again, that's according to the Bar Tanura, that it's an unplanted area. According to the Gra and the Rosh Serilio, you wouldn't have to do that at all. Instead, you could just plant the two vegetables side by side, no problem, as long as each of the vegetable patches are sufficiently large. And how sufficiently large? 6x6 tfachim is sufficiently large. Tfu b'yerek, what happens if you have amongst your greens you plant grain, or yerek b'tavua, amongst your grain fields you plant some kind of green, some vegetables, whatever it is. The rule is Beis Rova. This first shita is that it doesn't matter. The area that we're talking about, if you have a square planted area, has to be a whole Beis Rova inside of each. The grains and the greens both must be Beis Rova inside to be visually distinct, according to the Gra, and according to the Bar Tanura, etc., means an unplanted area the size of a Beis Rova between your grains and greens. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees, and he says, Yerek b'tavua, if you're planting a vegetable patch, a patch of yirakos, of greens, beside or within or next to a grain field, then shisha tefachim is sufficient. You don't need a full Beis Rova. Six tefachim will do, meaning the space of unplanted area, according to the Bar Tanura, between the grains and the greens need not be a whole Beis Rova, as the previous Tana held. Rather, a simple 6x6 tefachim would be sufficient. And according to the Gra, we're saying that if you have a big big grain field and you want to plant a vegetable patch along one of its edges, again, not totally surrounded on all four sides, but on one of its edges, no problem. As long as your vegetable patch is 6x6 tefachim, that's sufficient because it's visually distinct as a 6x6 plot of vegetables next to a larger grain field. Halach, however, does not follow Rabbi Eliezer. It follows the Tanakama, meaning that if you have grains and greens side by side, and your grains are in a square area, and your greens in a square area, as opposed to rows, as we discussed previously, we had rows and strips and lines, shuros, etc. But if you have a square of vegetables, you'll need to have, according to Bar Tanura, the full base row of unplanted area, offsetting the area from the grains from the greens. And according to the Gra and the Rosh Serilio, you need to have both, if you have squares, both the grains and the greens be a full Beis Rova inside size to be visually distinct if you want to plant them one next to the other.